Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of American Psychosis Radio with your host, me, Jory Rowe, where you're listening to me and leaving everyone else alone. Let's get started with a little bit about what's happened today in history. And as you may understand, we're going to start out each show with this from history.com. And it is September 19th, 2015. But however, the lead story for this segment of the show is, we'll state 1957, Nevada is the site of the first ever underground nuclear explosion. And in 1777, according to the American Revolution, Arnold and Gates argued at First Battle of Saratoga. And in automotive history, 1973, the death of country rock pioneer inspires car crime. Let's check about that, see what it says. Because that, when I was preparing for the show, I've often wondered what that was all about. So let's, old musician Graham Parsons, 26-year-old musicians, Graham Parsons dies of multiple drug use, morphine and tequila, in a California motel room. His death inspired one of the more bizarre automobile-related crimes on record. Two of his friends stashed his body in a borrowed hearse and then drove it into the middle of the Joshua Tree National Park, where they doused it with gasoline and set it on fire. But Parsons' music helped define country rock sound, and his records have influenced everyone from the Rolling Stones to Wilco. And how about those apples for that part in history. Now we're going to move out of that business of the show, and we're going to talk a lot more about who we're really on for tonight, and it's about the American Psychosis Radio biography series, and tonight we're going to talk about Sigmund Freud. As our producers have developed a new series here on APR, this one will be about a biography of the life of Sigmund Freud, briefly discussed in the last episode. I will talk about his life, research, and accomplishments in this 30-minute episode, and this will be the first of several biography documentary shows that will be about the lives of who had the greatest impact on psychological advancements in the science and mystery of the mind. So let's kick it off, and let's talk about this Sigmund Freud character, a scholar and psychiatrist from the sources of biography.com. If you want to know anything about anybody and their biography, this is the website to go to. Hence, we are using it for tonight's show. So let's first start out with this. I want to just forementioned, tonight's show, there will be no phone calls, so you know, don't get too finger happy if you have questions, because I'm going to try to go with the quick facts first about Sigmund Freud. His occupation was a scholar and psychiatrist. I guess you could say a scholar is, well, somebody who studies a lot. His birth date was May 6, 1856, and his death date is September 23rd, 1939. Now, if we were doing this show on the 23rd, it'd be on that date when we do the history part of the show. His education was obtained at the University of Vienna, and his place of birth was Freiburg, Moravia, Australian Empire, and his place of death was London, England. And the originality is Sigismund Shlomo Freud. But let's start with the synopsis of the story. Sigmund Freud was born in Freiburg, which is now known as the Czech Republic in Czechoslovakia, on May 6, 1856, well before the Lincoln administration here in this country. Freud developed psychoanalysis, a method through which an analyst unpacks unconscious conflicts based on the free associations, dreams, and fantasies of the patient. His theories on child sexuality, libido, and the ego, among other topics, were some of the most influential academic concepts of the 20th century. In early career, Sigmund Freud was born in the Austrian town of Freiburg on May 6, 1856. Just said that probably two or three times if you had not heard. When he was 4 years old, his family moved to Vienna, the town where he would live and work for most of the remainder of his life. He received his medical degree in 1881 and became engaged to Mary the following year. His marriage produced six children, the youngest of whom, Anna, was to herself become a distinguished psychoanalyst. After graduation, Freud promptly set up the private practice he began treating various psychological disorders. Considering himself and foremost a scientist rather than a doctor, he endeavored to understand the journey of human knowledge and experience. But early in his career, Freud became greatly influenced by the work of his friend, Viennese colleague, Josef Ruhr. I don't know how to pronounce these names. I'll just spell them. J-O-S-E-F, or Josef Ruhr, B-R-E-U-E-R. Who had in fact discovered that when he encouraged his hysterical patient to talk uninhibitedly about the earliest occurrences of the symptoms sometimes gradually abated, inspired by Brewer. Freud posited that the neuroses had their origins in deeply traumatic experiences that had occurred in the patient's past. Could he have been the pioneer of PTSD? Don't know yet. He believed that the original occurrences had been forgotten and hidden from consciousness. His treatment was to empower his patients to recall the experience and bring it to consciousness, and in doing so, confront it both intellectually and emotionally. He believed that one then could discharge it and rid oneself of neurotic symptoms. Freud and Brewer published their theories and findings in Studies in Hysteria in 1895. Boy, that was a long time ago. Now, we're going to cut to a break here just here for a short second, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the controversial publications written by Brewer and Freud themselves when we come back here on American Psychosis Radio with your host, Jory Rowe. Oh, After much work together, Brewer ended his relationship, feeling that Freud was placed too much emphasis on the sexual origins of a patient's neurosis and was completely unwilling to consider other viewpoints. But Freud continued to refine his own argument, and in 1900, after a serious period of self-analysis, published The Interpretation of Dreams. Got to check that book out to see how it reads. He followed it in 1901 with The Psychopathology of Everyday Life, and in 1905 with Three Essays on the Theory of Sexuality. The great reference that was later given to Freud's theories was not in evidence for some years. Most of his contemporaries felt like Brewer that his emphasis on sexuality was either scandalous or overplayed. In 1909, he was invited to give a series of lectures in the United States. It was after these visits and the publication of his 1916 book, Five Lectures on Psychoanalysis, that his fame grew exponentially. But leaving a lasting legacy, Freud's many theories, including those about psychic energy, the Oedipus complex, and the importance of dreams, were no doubt influenced by other scientific discoveries of his day. Charles Darwin's understanding of humankind as a progressive element of the animal kingdom certainly informed Freud's investigation of human behavior. Additionally, the formulation of new principle by Helmholtz, stating that energy in any given physical system is always constant, informed Freud's scientific inquiries into the human mind. Freud's work had been both rapturously praised and hotly critiqued, but no one has influenced the science of psychology as intensely as Sigmund Freud. After a life of constant inquiry, he committed suicide after requesting a lethal dose of morphine from his doctor while exiled in England in 1939, following a battle with oral cancer. That was a very short, rather short article about him, as we've read quite a bit, you know, just, but if you go to bio.com and search for Sigmund Freud, you'll see a picture, and he's got mouth cancer, as it talked about in the end. Look what he's got in his right hand in the photograph. You'll see a big, fat, hog leg of a cigar he's smoking. That ought to be something. Okay, let's go to another quick biography section, or website, I should say, on Wikipedia. We'll go there for right now. See if there is just any information that we did not hear about a Sigmund Freud. And you know what? I can't believe this just happened. My web browser and computer just went belly up here for a moment. We're going to try to get on another music break here just for a quick second while we solve this problem, and we'll be right back on the air with you. This is Jory Rowe, and you're listening to American Psychosis Radio. I'm waiting for the fire. I'm waiting for the sun. Now we're back on here live with you on American Psychosis Radio with host Jory Rowe. I'm glad you tuned in to listen to me and left everyone else alone when the web browser went belly up on me and the computer screen just went blank. I had to quickly bring it back up. So I did that. That problem solved already. I don't know what we're going to do here. Let's go over here to Google. And let's try to find some more information about Sigmund Freud. Now we're coming down here to Wikipedia.com. We're going to try it again. There it comes up. Same picture. Same picture of Sigmund Freud holding the cigar in his hand. Probably is what gave him mouth cancer. And it's so bizarre that he committed suicide. And if you go to Wikipedia.com, you can find the house where Freud's birthplace, a rented room in a locksmith's house in the Czechoslovakian Republic. I find it easier just to say Czechoslovakia rather than Czech Republic. It makes more sense to say Czechoslovakian Republic. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know, but we'll just go with what I think for right now. Now, let's talk about something about the development of psychoanalysis here. And this is probably an underlying foundation on how they diagnose psychological conditions today. Now, I'm not sure if they use Freud's theory, but I saw something about Jung, Carl Jung is one of Freud's partners there, and I would be willing to bet that he was some sort of pioneer to psychological needs of soldiers in World War I and World War II, in fact. No, maybe not that late. But this, I should have started with this, but we're going to read about his mouth cancer problem and his escape from Nazism. I guess he was, part of that issue there. But anyway, let's read about his cancer. In February 1923, Freud detected leukoplakia, a benign growth associated with heavy smoking on his mouth. Freud initially kept this secret, but in April 1923, he informed Ernest Jones, telling him that the growth had been removed. Freud consulted the dermatologist, Maximilian Steiner, who advised him to quit smoking, but lied about the growth's seriousness, minimizing its importance. Freud later saw Felix Dusch, who saw that the growth was cancerous. He identified it to Freud using the euphemism, a bad leukoplakia, instead of the technical diagnostic called epithelioma. Dutch advised Freud to stop smoking and have the growth excised. Freud was treated by Marcus Hajek, a rhinologist whose competence he had previously questioned. Hajek performed unnecessary cosmetic surgery in his clinic's outpatient department. Freud bled during and after the operation and may narrowly have escaped death. Freud subsequently saw Dutch again. Dutch said that further surgery would be required, but did not tell Freud that he had cancer because he was worried that Freud might wish to commit suicide. which initially is what happened to Freud. But let's talk a little bit about his escape from Nazism, if the article isn't that long. Actually, we talked about his cancer. Let's not talk about the Nazism. Let's talk about his death. By September 1939, Freud's cancer of the jaw was causing him increasingly severe pain and had been declared to be inoperable. The last book he read, Balzac's La, I don't understand what the words, how they read, but prompted reflections on his own increasingly frailty, and a few days later he turned to his doctor, friend, and fellow refugee, Max Scherr, reminding him that they had previously discussed the terminal stages of his illness. Scherr, you remember our contract, not to leave me in the lurch when the time had come. Now it is nothing but torture and makes no sense. When Scherr replied that he had not forgotten, Freud said, I thank you, and then talk it over with Anna. And if she thinks it's right, then make an end of it. Anna Freud wanted to postpone her father's death. Scherr convinced her it was pointless to keep him alive, and on 21st and 22nd September, administered doses of morphine that resulted in Freud's death on 23rd September 1939. 3 days after his death, Freud's body was cremated at the Golden Creek Crematorium in North London, with Herons of King's Knightsbridge acting as funeral directors on the instructions of his son, Ernst. Funeral orations were given by Ernest Jones and Australian author Stephen Zweig. Freud's ashes were later placed in the crematorium's Ernest George Columbarium. They rest on a plinth designed by his son, Ernst, and a sealed ancient Greek urn that Freud received as a gift from Princess Bonaparte, and which he had kept in his study in Vienna for many years. After his wife Martha died in 1951, her ashes were also placed in the urn. Okay, and if you look at that picture, you can see where Sigmund Freud's ashes, along with his wife's, are entombed in that urn. But I'm going to check on the time for right now. Oops. I'm going to check on the time of the show and see just how we're doing on time, and we'll be right back here with you after another short break. Want to know what's going to be on American Psychosis Radio in the upcoming weeks? Stick around and Jory will read off what's coming up next, topic-wise, here on American Psychosis Radio. Okay, now that we're back from the break, we've just got a smidgen of time left. And I want to go over what to expect in the upcoming shows here on American Psychosis. We're going to be talking about my medicine change because I did finally get in to see my new psychiatrist. And that's what this show's all about, is about the mind, about what goes wrong with the mind, who pioneers the research and the science of the mind, and the whole nine yards with that. So we did Sigmund Freud tonight for an inside the mind look at biographies of people who've changed psychoanalysis and psychoactive medicine. But the next show will be about my medicine change, and it's going to be a little bit more about me rather than anyone else. And then to begin the shows in October, we're going to start out with a show called What's the Deal in American Psychosis Radio, inside look at schizoaffective disorder, followed by Shocking Memories, Junior High Hell, and Shocking Memories, High School Hell, with a guest, Renee Shipley. I talked this over with her. She's possibly going to be the producer for this show here in the future. So stick around for that and a whole lot more. Plus, the last show in October will be Social Torture and Dating. Well, we've got a lot to squeeze into 1.5 hour for that show. And in November, 4 shows in November, Times of When I Was Wrong with me, Jory, and The Depths of Depression, followed by the last 2 shows in the series, Genetic Disorders, Part 1 and Part 2. Now, these are tentatively what's on the agenda, but they could change. The titles could change, just as they did this month. There's a couple title changes, and one as of next month there was, but no big deal there. But I'm glad you tuned in to listen to me. And you have left everyone else alone. This is your host, Jory Rowe. This is American Psychosis Radio. And we're out of time for now. We'll catch you later and on the next show. ...2015 JC Entertainment 14 Productions. Jerry, open your paws down, please.